A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 11th of October 2020, Sunday class. We will continue with our sharing from the book, The Path to Truth for Modern Day Bodhisattva Practitioner. We are at page 196. The title is Discipline Our Minds, Maintain Resolve, Attain Virtue and Uphold Precepts. This is a very good advice. The title is Discipline Our Mind, Maintain Resolve, Attain Virtue and Uphold Precepts. So the author started by explaining, he said, regardless of how long you have been with Shiji, volunteers sincerely support Shiji with like minds and a common goal. This is taking the Buddha's spirit as their own. They firmly believe that their own mind are the same as the Buddha's. It's because of that virtue, the understanding and the spirit. So they really hope to transform themselves. And they have that belief that their mind can be the same as the Buddha's mind. They are learning to have the Buddha's great compassion by treating all suffering beings in the world with compassion and compassion and contributing their ability to help others. So that virtue of compassion is very important. Then she continued, she said, I remember when we were building the Qingshi Abbot, the architect said to me, Master, according to Feng Shui, it is not auspicious for this abbot to face this direction this year. It must face another direction. Then the author said, I said, every direction is auspicious. The abbot must face the road with a mountain behind it. The mountain is like the steady back of a chair, and the road we face is bustling with people coming and going. Won't it be wonderful to sit comfortably and watch the lively scene? Then the author said, would you like to choose an auspicious day and time to start your construction work? The contractor asked her. Then she replied again, every day is a good day, means auspicious day. When we were building the Shiji General Hospital in Hualien, in the eastern part of Taiwan, another architect told me, Master, a fortune teller told me that I cannot head east for the next 3 months. I would like to take 3 months off. I asked him, in your house, where is the bedroom and where is the kitchen? He answered, my bedroom is located in the south side of the house and the kitchen is on the east. I said, so what do you do when you need to head east for the kitchen? He said, does it count even in the house? I asked again, where is your office? He thought for a moment and said, it's to the east of my house. I said to him, does it mean you cannot go to office? Actually, all directions are relative. Taichung is located in the south of Taipei and north of Tainan. Since we live in the universe and there is no fixed point, we should not think too much about such things. With the right mind, your energy field will be strong and no evil can harm you. So what she said is quite true, there is some truth. But the trouble with human beings is they have a lot of belief system, like feng shui and all those things. So a lot of the feng shui advice given are very logical. And to many people, they thought it's really true. Then they become gullible. So the emphasis went towards feng shui. I don't deny feng shui has its science, But as far as life is concerned, karma is concerned, feng shui play a very limited role. The main role that your life depends on is not so much on feng shui. It's mainly on karma. So if you don't take care of karma, you are not going to make it in life. You are going to get into a lot of trouble. That's the reason why the author said, with the right mind, means you have right view, right understanding, you live your life in accordance with the law of karma, then your energy field will be strong and no evil can harm you. This is true. So do not spend money and worry about feng shui. It is not important. My understanding is also the same, except I can understand better, then I can give you very good advice. As far as feng shui is concerned, I don't pay much attention to it. We have no meaning. The nature's law that governs life and existence are the five universal order. So as a scientific person or science student and engineering background, I understand the power of the first two nature's law, physical law of nature and biological order of nature, the first two scientific law of Uttaniyama and Bijaniyama. Then we have the three spiritual law, law of karma, law of mind, and law of truth. Kamaniyama, Chittaniyama, and Dhammaniyama. As long as you understand these three laws and you live in accordance with it, then you will have good life, good spiritual understanding. Then your life will be taken care of, your karma will be taken care of. So you don't have to worry about other things. Feng shui, as far as I understand, it has its own science, but it's limited. Limited in the sense that it depends on the understanding that man and nature must harmonize. So feng shui make use of this understanding. For man and nature to harmonize, they will look at the topography of nature. Then they will come out with all the feng shui teaching. So to have good feng shui, to have better feng shui is more conducive for life. I do not deny that fact. But your life doesn't depend on feng shui alone. Your feng shui alone can never protect you. What is feng shui? Feng shui means when you understand nature's movement, the qi movement, they try to optimize on it and capitalize on it, so that you will have the good qi, the good condition for good things to happen in life, so that you avoid the negative qi flow or evil consequences of that nature's location where all the negative energy field may come in. That's why Junction House, they always say it's bad for most people. You stay at Junction House, you have to be careful. That is a bad luck. But it depends. What does Junction House means? Means you are facing a road at that junction. Then nature is flow path of qi. So you live in a junction house means you receive a lot of nature's qi, good and bad. They will flow into that junction. There is a flow path. Then when it hit the house, good or bad, it will come. So it depends on who live in that house. If that person don't have good karmic nature behind, if they cannot receive the good qi, then they won't benefit much. That's why sometimes they say saumheya, all the good qi is of no use because you don't have good karmic condition to receive them. Then all the negative qi that come, most people have a lot of karmic negativity because they don't know the Dhamma. They don't take care of their life. They don't follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, to good, and purify the mind. So they don't have good karmic nature. So what happens is when the bad chi come, they get into big trouble where it conditions negative things to happen. So when you understand that, you will not depend on feng shui to live your life. Because everywhere you go, the qi flow will be different. Just like what the author was told by the architect who believe in feng shui. Then they feel good when they follow the feng shui master's advice. Yeah, for me, you can forget about it. You take care of karma. You take care of virtue. If you are guided by the Dhamma way, every day is an auspicious day. Every location is an auspicious occasion. I can prove it to you because I tested all this during the early years of my cultivation. I tested on the junction house, the feng shui thing and all those things. It so happened that I rented a house in the early 1980s, 85, I remember. That was a junction house, facing a junction. But surprisingly, when I stayed there, I was promoted. Everything go my way because I had the good karma to receive the good merits. But all the negative thing doesn't affect me. My nature is different, strong. My wife also nothing wrong. My daughter also nothing wrong. Except my son, he has a compound fracture because of sudden coming pass. Fractured the hand. He was very small, so it's okay. But my two brothers who stay with me, both also get into slight accident. Yeah. But this is not really serious. Then later on when I move out, the tenant that took over, he get into trouble. His aquarium has a very nice kamlong yi, the very expensive type of fish which he was taking care of for many years. And that one is so big, he told me when he shifted in, yeah, I saw the fish. He said, this one is worth 20,000 ringgit at that time. It's not going to sell. Yeah, it will bring him luck. But 2 days later, when I went to the house, the fish was no more. It seems the fish died. Then I said, what happened? He said, because the wife spray mortine around the house, and the cockroaches, they kena the mortine, about to die. One of them jumped into the fish tank, and the fish ate the thing and get into trouble. That's why the fish died. Then after that, 1 or 2 months later, I went and visited him to collect letter, my mail. Then he asked me, does anything happen to you when you stay in this house? I said, no. Why? He said, because his fish died. Then after that, his son also get into trouble. Many things happen. Oh, I said like that. You better watch out for the junction house. I said, because they cannot understand. So if you don't have the karma on this house, you will get into trouble. That's it. Finish. But for those who can, no problem. So I never believe in feng shui. I never believe in tradition. I never believe in all those things. I just take care of my karma, take care of life, develop the understanding of the Dhamma. And my life has been very blessed, very beautiful. That's it. So this understanding is very important. It doesn't involve any belief system or what, because the understanding of what constitutes karma is very important. If that is the one that is entirely responsible, we are like the Buddha said, each and every living being, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So you look at your life, it's almost 100% dependent on karma. If that is the case, what must you do? You must take care of karma. And how do you take care of karma? Follow the advice of the Buddha, avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. And how do you avoid all evil? Keep your precepts. Your breaking of precepts constitute major evil. That's how the teaching come about. With regards to right view with regards to the law of karma, from there, that right view enable you to understand what is conducive for the good life. So you have to take care of karma. That's why you have to keep the precept. So this understanding are very important, because you analyze the precept, whoever who breaks the precept commits major evil. We have gone through all this, the five precepts. The first precept, take for example, Manatipata Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhi Yami. What does it mean? We undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. So the inquiry is, who kill and who harm? These are people who are deluded, selfish, emotional. That's why all the three evil roots are there. And when you have the evil root, you are evil. Only people with such evil mentality or intention will kill and harm. So when you understand this, you know these are evil root, root of all evil. When you commit them, you commit major evil. So the law of karma is you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. So when the condition arises, you will become the victim. People will kill you, harm you, and do all those things to you so that you will suffer back. That is what the nature's law is all about. You reap what you sow. So for those who understand, it's like the Mahayana teaching, they used to say, everything is about cause and effect. 种因结果, 种善因结善果, 种恶因结恶果. Then he advised the living being, Master Shen Hao always say, 千万要小心, means you have to be careful. 千万不要种错因结错果. Because if you know the law of karma is such, based on cause and effect, you plant the seed of evil, you will reap the fruit of evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. That's why you cannot plant the seed of evil. You plant the seed of evil, which is the wrong seed, then you will reap the wrong fruit. That's what karma is all about. Nature's law is all about. So when you understand this, you will be extraordinarily careful. You will determine to train yourself to be mindful, to be heedful, to be aware, so that you will not plant the seed of evil, so that you will follow the advice of the Buddha, to be ever mindful, to keep your precept, to abstain from all evil, then to cultivate wholesomeness for good life. So if you have this, you don't have to worry about feng shui. That every day is an auspicious day to you. Every event, every location is an auspicious time and location for you. So you don't have to worry about feng shui so much. So this is my understanding where I have really investigated into it and live it. And I realize that is what it is. Then even rite and ritual also say my wedding ceremony. The Tai Kham Chai used to tell my mother to advise me when I walk out of the house, I don't step on the Mun Kwang, otherwise it bring back luck. I purposely step on it, nothing happened to me. Then all the direction when I say forget about it, because our planet is round, it's a globe, and it evolves around the sun. Every moment, every instant, we are in different part of the universe at any one time. So because we have a planet that rotates on its axis, then it's like the sun rise from the east and set in the west. No, there is no sun rising in the east and setting in the west. It's because of the Earth rotation on this axis, you appear to see that. But different time, you are on different part of the universe. You go around a very big elliptical, they call it an elliptical cycle around the sun. Every year, you go around one cycle. So different time, you are in different part of space. Then what is east, west, north, south? It has no meaning at all because you are looking at the rotation of the Earth on this axis. And the fallacy become like belief system. We thought the sun rise on the east. The sun never rise. The sun is always there, static in that same direction. It's the rotation of the Earth axis that created the perception that there is like a morning sun that arises from the east and sets in the west because it rotates from east to west. There is the rotation on this axis, which is 66.5 degrees. It's tilted from the equator. So because of that, we have weather, our planet become unique and special. So science and geography can explain all this. So with this understanding, I hope as Dharma practitioner, you won't be deluded by it. But please don't go and offend Feng Shui master or Feng Shui people. That is their bread and butter, their career. Even if you know, you understand, you only use it to benefit yourself and people who trust you and believe in you and share the understanding. Otherwise, don't try to say negative thing about Feng Shui. Now, Feng Shui has its science. Everybody has his karma. People who believe in Feng Shui has his karma too. So finally, they will come to realize. The other example that I gave was when I told my mother that Feng Shui is not really true. Don't put so much emphasis on it. Well, my mother been uneducated, born in China and came over with my father, they have very strong belief system, tradition. He said, every generation, we hold on to this belief and we cultivate philopiety, we cultivate feng shui, we have all this Chinese tradition, belief system and culture. We are not going to do away with it. That's why when my father died, she want to burn paper house. I let her do, but I let her find out why it's gullible and foolish, not much use. What is important is the care of karma, the care of life. So how I explained to my mother was beautiful. I think this one you can learn. You will understand clearly. I told my mother and my father too. I said, do you believe in feng shui? He said, yes, we must have proper feng shui, buy proper burial ground, pay for it, and build good feng shui. And the feng shui must not have problem, must not be flooded, inundated, or have crack and all those things. We must express philopiety and all those things. Then I asked my mother and my father, I said, if you believe in feng shui, means your brothers and sisters, they are still in China and only you and dad came over, then you all have the good life. How come the feng shui never really transformed them? How come only you and father who came out, you benefited and become so happy and have the good life? Oh, he said, because Malaysia is different. Jiufu, very good, is it? The soil very flat, a lot of rain. So, do you attribute the feng shui? Well, you have the same grandparents feng shui in China. But how come they have that type of life and you have this type of life over here? Then she started to laugh. No? He said, maybe because we are lucky we came over here. Yeah, so that has nothing to do with feng shui. Right? If it is the same feng shui, everyone should prosper or everyone should suffer. Right? Then she laughed. Then I said, okay, the next point that I will prove to you is you look at your own children. I said, she gave birth to 9 brothers and sisters of ours. I said, you look at 9 of us. They are born in the same family, with the same parent, and most of us are from the same locality. Then when we grew up, I say everyone is different. Genetically, biologically, some of us are very tall, some of us are very short, some of us are very hairy, full of hair, chest, and some of us, like myself, I hardly have hair, I don't have hair in the chest and all those things. But my brothers, some of them have. Then I say, some are very good in education, spiritual. Some cannot study. Then they, of course, excel in other field, business and other things. I say, you look at your own children. Everyone is different. So where is the feng shui factor? I say, the way I look at it is different. I say, it's your karmic inheritance. If you have good karma, everything will go your way. You don't take care of karma, everything will go the other way. Then the blessing all that. So as I explained, she started to understand. Based on all this, that's why they actually slowly straightened their view. And even my brothers and sisters, they start to understand. Then I teach them what are the things that they should focus on and essentially commit themselves to, so that they can have the good life. But I never reject things that people believe in. But like my father, when he passed away, I told my brothers and sisters that they don't know what to do. They depend on me. So I'm the second in the family. I advise them, we should ask my elder brother for permission to bring my father back to have the funeral at his house, where he's the eldest. And after my dad, he is supposed to be the eldest in charge. And my elder brother straight away agreed. That's why we agreed to have it there. And there was harmony. Then they looked forward to me for advice. So I advised them what to do. The first time I had to teach them. Then I did a lot of good things that they witnessed. Then for my mother also, I don't resist. I say, you want to burn paper house? No problem. We bought for her. Then a lot of things happened. Very funny. That one, too long a story. I will cut it short. Then they saw nobody cry when my father died, because my father lived to a very ripe age, 80, about 80. Then he has done what he wants to do in life. He was very happy. He helped many people. He went back to China, helped the brothers. And my mother's side, also the brother and sister, he helped them and helped transform their life. And they do a lot of wholesomeness. They did their duty very well. They sacrificed a lot for us. And they are good parents. That's why I say, finally, they have their good life. So no need to worry. I say, no matter how you hold the funeral, as long as there's filial piety, then let mom decide what she wants to do. Then everything will unfold. Then what happened was, when she wanted a paper house, a lot of things happened until finally he understand. Then he said, okay, next time when they come to my time, is my mother's time, he want to follow the Buddhist way. He said that one is cleaner, neater, easier to understand, no need to waste a lot of money on rites and ritual and all the chanting and the Namola waters. Well, when I show her, the Buddhist chanting was free. It's up to you to make an offering or donation. Oh, he said, so good. Oh, the one she hired, the what they call the nun to chant, had to pay almost, at that time, the money, 8,000-9,000 was a lot of money. Then she tried to negotiate for a lower price. Then they warned her, you want your husband to go to hell or not? This type of money cannot negotiate. Wow, my mother was very unhappy after that. They want to burn the paper house, so the rain came and all those things. So my mother later on understood, where he saw what I did and how my life becomes so beautiful and so wonderful. And my parents know that I am different. I excel in every way in life, academic field. I brought honor to the family. Then I became very successful, and I advise the family on almost all metta, and everything turned out well and beautiful. Then based on my understanding, my mother had faith in me. That's why she became very happy after that. So this is how you learn the truth, the Dhamma, not through belief system. You put it to test, real life test, find out for yourself. From life itself, you learn. Then nature's law is beautiful. It will unfold. Then everything will actually manifest in accordance with nature's law for you to understand. That's how I learned about feng shui. I learned about tradition, belief. You know? Then the other thing that I found out was the best. The people used to believe that there is this unlucky number, 13 or 14, such say. Then what happened was that time when my daughter was about to be born, I had this curiosity. I want to find out whether all this superstition about the unlucky number and all those things was true or not. Like certain type of race or certain type of society, they believe certain numbers are very bad, especially the Chinese. So what happened was, after I made that aspiration, it's so funny, you know, then my wife gave birth to my daughter. When I went to the hospital, you know, the bed was number 13. So I laughed. I said, never mind, okay. I said, can, my wife, this bed, no problem. I don't insist on changing the bed. Then the bigger shock was when I went and did up the birth cert for my daughter. When I got my birth cert, I looked at the four-digit last number, 4453. I tell you, if you are Cantonese, you would have panic. In Cantonese, it means sei sei m sang. You will definitely die and won't survive. So I laughed. I say, this is beautiful. I want to find out. Then my daughter's birth was perfect. Nothing happened. She came back after one night, 2 days stay, and government hospital was so cheap, $9 a day. I paid 18 ringgit for the birth. And I saved so much money, and my daughter came out healthy, and we lived beautiful life. That's why I know all this, don't believe. Don't need to believe. These are just gullible superstition, tradition. No need to waste time on it. So this is how I learn, and I find out, really, which is very useful to help people, so that people can also understand and focus their energy in the correct direction to take care of precepts, to take care of karma, to follow the advice of the Buddha. That's the reason why the Buddhist teaching is very beautiful. You follow the Dhamma way, you will have good life. That the Dhamma way is based on the wisdom of Sammasambuddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, based on right view, with respect to all the nature's laws that governs life and existence. So this understanding is very important. I hope it can help more people. Then as Kayamita, you can test it out and find out yourself whether what I say is true or not. And if it's true, you have the faith, you can share with your children, your family members, those who trust you and have faith in you, so that less and less people will become gullible. But a lot of people who get into feng shui and get into trouble is because of karma. In the past, they also gullible. They cheat people, deceive people through all these things. Then this life come, they become the victim. That's it. And I have seen many people get into trouble, and then finally they come and seek help and advice. Then they told me how during the crisis, economic crisis, how they land themselves into trouble, and they believe in feng shui. Then they realize all sorts of feng shui advice they go and do, nothing work. They become worse. And one of them become very strong in the faith of Dhamma is because he really hit kena severely left and right. Very severe. See, I never seen my life so rottenly disrupted, like very sorry, bad luck, really bad luck. Everything go wrong. He tried everything, all the feng shui, everything, but nothing wrong. And then when he attended my class in the early day at Chempaka, then he was listening patiently for about a month or two before he started asking me questions. Yeah, he got a notebook. I realized he sat at the back. Then finally, when he understood this thing, he was full of joy. He came and approached me and talked to me and explained his life to me. He said, "Brother Teo, I have been very successful before. I did very well and I make my money. Then I lost it during one crisis. I lost everything and owed the bank a lot of adversarial bankruptcy, like everything go wrong. Every aspect of his life like collapsed in front of him." He said, "Never before have such bad fortune and all this thing." And he said, "Not until I understood what you share and what you explain, I couldn't have an answer to what happened." Then he said, "From now on, I'm going to have faith in the Buddha Dharma. I'm going to change my life." Then really he changed and he turned around. Finally, he even got off the hook of that bankruptcy thing. Somebody came and helped him and cleared him of the bankruptcy, and he met a lot of good people. Then he did a lot of Dharma work after that. So this Kayamita was very grateful and very happy. Then off and on, he will come and seek my advice, talk to me. Then he became a good friend, and the family also same. He has beautiful family, yeah? The daughter, the wife, and all this thing. So these are the sharing that I want to share with you about my understanding of this feng shui thing and the law of karma, the Buddhist teaching. Hopefully it can help more and more people, yeah? And it can also bring forth the understanding so that Kayamita can confidently move. You take care of karma, take care of your life, follow the advice of the Buddha, your life will change for the better. And you will have good life, means character-wise, understanding-wise, personality-wise. You will transform for the better, and you will have beautiful life, meaningful life, good life, and wonderful life. So this is the purpose of cultivating the Dhamma. Of course, finally, is to awaken, to become enlightened, so that you can live the life of enlightened being, to experience the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda. Okay, now we can continue with the sharing. We see what the author says. Everyone must have a righteous thought and view to rid ourselves of superstition. Now, this is a good advice. Don't go and believe in rites and rituals and superstition, including feng shui. As long as we are selfless, means without the sakyadity, the self-delusion, everything we do will be in accordance with the true Dhamma. When we keep to the true Dhamma, we will not have any worry or fear. This is because Dhamma is the basis of living life. When you really live life following the Dhamma way, you will become beautiful. Nothing will happen to you. Your life will transform, and your life will transform for the better, and you will have a good life. You can go and try it out and find out yourself, which is very beautiful. So upholding our resolve means taking the master's mission, the four mission, as our own, and resolving to walk the bodhisattva path, is really beautiful. So when you uphold your resolve means you follow the master's mission, the four great mission, as your own, and resolve to continue to walk the bodhisattva path. Since we have chosen the right goal, we must be persistent no matter what obstacle we encounter. This is upholding our resolve. Means you must have faith, you must not waver, you must continue to persevere. Then it worries me to see the global climate becoming aberrated and people's resolve wavering. We have resolved to be Tsuji volunteer. We must be vigilant and treat everything in the world with respect. And we work towards creating a harmonious society, which they should also include a caring and harmonious society. Yeah? As for upholding virtue, many people understand quite well the principle of great love and forgiveness, and are able to advise others to be understanding and accommodating. However, they are unable to do so when they themselves encounter challenges. This one is quite true for people who are still not stable in their understanding of the Buddha Dharma. Yeah? So this part, you have to take a note. Yeah? When it comes to advising people, it's always so easy. But when it comes to your own, if you can do it, means you have the number. Otherwise, you still don't have the number. So this part, like the author say, however, they are unable to do so when they themselves encounter challenges. Therefore, we need spiritual understanding, spiritual cultivation. Some people think learning Buddha Dharma will help them accumulate merits and virtue. Merits are actually attained by being humble and virtuous. And virtue are attained by giving precedence to others. We must work hard to cultivate inwardly and do our best to be humble. When we interact with people, our voice, our demeanor, our attitude should be soft and gentle. This is noble evil path. Eh? Then we are manifesting virtue. Further, we must uphold precepts. Precepts are rules. Not only do monastic practitioners need to uphold precepts, lay practitioners too, and those willing to walk the path of the Bodhisattva must also follow the rules of human conduct. That's what precept is all about. Tsuji volunteer must uphold Tsuji's 10 precepts. Oh, they have more 10 precepts. So we go down, see what are the 10 precepts. No killing. No stealing, these are the same as the 5 precepts. No sexual misconduct, no lying, and no intoxicant, same. Then they include no smoking, or use of narcotic, or bitterness, no gambling. Then practice fellow piety, and develop pleasant manner and speech. Abide by the traffic law, no participation in political activity or demonstration. Oh, this 5 they added is good. Eh? He's a good guy. So we go back. Okay. So this 10 precepts that they introduce is very good. Eh? There's 5 above the normal precept administered by the Buddha. This sounds suitable for our society now. All of our physical life and wisdom life are interconnected. True. This is very true. The slightest movement of one individual will impact the entire group. Therefore, all of us must cherish ourselves and uphold precept. Like Krishnamurti say, the individual must change. It's only after the individual change, the whole collective consciousness can change. Whereas the collective is the summation of all the individual. If the individual do not change, the collective cannot change. And you need at least 1% of the collective to change before it can have positive influence on the rest. Therefore, all of us must cherish ourselves and uphold precept. Tsuji volunteers discipline their mind, maintain resolve, attain virtue, and uphold precepts. Thus accumulating the power of love to safeguard society. Nowadays, what our society needs most is a pure stream of love. This is very true. And we benefit others or people with a kind heart, good words and good deeds, everyone can live in peace. So this is very true. Huh? So Tsuji volunteer discipline their mind means they really, really cultivate the Dhammavi, means they keep the precepts. Then they maintain resolve, means they maintain the resolve to do the right thing in life, following the Dhammavi. Then through doing that, you attain virtue. So to achieve all this, you must uphold precept. So by doing all this, you are accumulating the power of love and virtue to save that society, help transform society, and be a blessing to all. So these are very beautiful sharing. So I think we finished that subsection, isn't it? Go to the next page. Ah yes, we finished that subsection. So what is the time now? Oh, okay. 3:51. Maybe we stop now. We will off the light. Then we will have 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. So just relax body and mind completely. Be at ease and let things be. Don't try to do anything. Relax, be at ease, and maintain awareness. That's it. Then stabilize that awareness nature. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. You have your senses in your physical body. You have your consciousness trapped inside. So upon contact, there will be a simultaneous arising of the respective sense of consciousness. So whatever you become conscious of or aware, you just let it be. Aware, finish. Don't try to do anything. Aware, finish. Then let the mind settle down and return to its original state before the stirring, before the thinking, before the reaction of mind. So this is the fastest way to settle down, to realize your true mind, your awareness nature, to stabilize your sati. So just do it, relax, maintain awareness, and continuity for as long as you can maintain this state. The third support, technically I put there 24-hour awareness, means maintain this awareness for as long as you can. So just relax, be at ease. That is the first support. Every mind state that arises, relax into it. Don't do anything. And maintain awareness. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Aware, finish. Until the mind becomes very quiet, very still. Initially, the senses will arise contact. Then just aware, finish. Just like my sweeping method, feel, relax, don't do anything. Then it's on aware, silent. Aware, silent. Then that whatever healer's thinking or mundane mind's activity, they will start to slow down. You don't feed them with any more thought energy. You don't want to anything, views, opinion, or what. You don't try to do anything. Just let things be. Acceptance is wisdom. Then you will realize that true mind, that beautiful meditative mind, the silent mind within, the awareness nature, stabilize that one. Then the meditation will become beautiful. If that nature stabilizes, the awareness nature, your mind will enter sati and you will understand many things. Okay, now I'll let you meditate on your own. You can slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind states you need to live your daily life, to cultivate the daily mindfulness. Okay, and you need to be mindful or heedful in the midst of life, means throughout your waking moments. Okay, now before we continue your second session, I have an announcement. There is a new book, I think, for those who have read the My Kayanamitas WhatsApp. You have seen the book, Metta Bhavana. Metta Bhavana is a Pali word, and it means loving kindness or universal loving kindness. So this book is very good. There is a very detailed explanation of this Metta Bhavana. Metta Bhavana, Metta means loving kindness or universal love. Bhavana is meditation. So meditation on loving kindness. This earlier version, there are two books. One written by Venerable Bhavana. It was, so happened the name also Bhavana. Then the other one is by Acharya Buddharakita. Both of them wrote this book, Metta Bhavana, and the second one has a different title, The Philosophy of Metta Bhavana. So they are slightly different, but it's on the same topic. The philosophy and cultivation of universal is put under appendix. So Metta, the philosophy and cultivation of universal love. So this one is put under the appendix. Both this book has helped me a lot in the early years of my cultivation when I started in 1979. I received this two booklet as free distribution booklet from Brickfield Vihara. And that time I really don't have any other type of meditation in hand. So I did this Metta Bhavana. And I found the book very useful, and it helped me so much. I developed this metta until it became very strong, very powerful. And I realized it helped me a lot. I have great love and kindness within. And I was able to experience many of those beautiful mind states. And because I went so deep into the cultivation of metta, many things happen. So I have shared some of the things that happened. And I think those Kayanamita who has followed this sharing, they will also know and understand. This metta is very powerful. One of the sharing is with the dog, the very big size dog. I think it's a very big but very beautiful dog in Melbourne. Then the other one is, I tested some of this metta force in real life on many occasions. And it helped in many ways because I can radiate this metta to bring about love and metta to the environment, to my entire neighborhood, house and all those things, and finally to the whole cosmic universe. And the mind keep on expanding, and that metta has different level, different stages, and it keep on expanding. And it was full of metta until it overflow. Then this nature can radiate it out. Then later on, that metta, it just came out of the nature, the heart, from the heart, straight from the heart. There's a very soothing metaphor that flow out whenever I speak on metta and radiate all this. Then I realized it helped me so much in the early years of development of my state and cultivation. Then this metta can also heal. It can heal many things. Your friend, your loved one, they have problem or sickness or whatever, or you want to radiate loving kindness to your parents, your brothers, your sisters, or your close friend, you can just do it. And it has its potency. That metaphor is very beautiful. Then people can receive it. Then for people who are sick, if they know how to use this, they can heal themselves really. Now this metta, when you develop it very well, you can actually send it to yourself. You can radiate, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You can have that feeling of metta very strong. And when you radiate to all the cells within your physical body and mind, they will really receive that metta energy. Then each and every other cells will have this metta energy, the well-being and happiness within, and the positive vibration. Then it can really heal. Your immune system will come back. Your mind state, everything will become beautiful. And your cells will be healthy, full of love, full of metta energy. And the type of vibration the animal can feel, the non-humans can be feel. And there are many benefits that come with metta bhavana. Maybe I will read to you certain aspects of the book so that you can make use of this book. So this book are available now. You can collect them during our 31st of October lunch if you are coming. Or if not, you can ask your friend who are coming to collect them on your behalf. Then for those who stay near my place or you are coming to SS2 PJ site, you can let me know and drop by to collect them. Either way you can do it, or you can go to Sui An, or if you are near the Partner Suri or Brother Tung's place, you can also collect from them. Or if you are staying around Section 11, you can collect from Miss Lee, Lee Siu Kek at Wu Ping Sing Se. My daughter say you can also get it from the website. I think Jin Hao has uploaded it, the PDF format and the ebook format. You can upload them and they are very beautiful. So now I will read to you the introduction. Metta Bhavana. The early 80s, Metta Bhavana books authored by Venerable Bhavana and Acharya Buddha Rakita had benefited Brother Teo a lot in the early days of his cultivation. Therefore, it is Brother Teo's sincere intention to recompile these Metta books to improve on its earlier version and make it more clear, more comprehensive, useful, and better so that it can benefit more cultivators who are interested in such topic. Special thanks should be accorded to Acharya Buddha Rakita for providing us with a very complete and good base script to enable his metta book to be recompiled and published as an appendix in this book for free distribution. Then acknowledgement is the donor's sincere intention that this metta book be given free to all who are interested and have the affinity to receive them. I would like to take this opportunity to thank and rejoice in the generosity and wholesomeness of all those Dharma friends, Kayamita, who have donated and helped out in one way or other in making this free distribution of Dharma Dana possible. Special thanks should be accorded to Sister Gong Lei Hong, who had personally taken her initiative to help type out the old Metta Bhavana script for my editing and recompilation, thereby enabling this Metta Bhavana book to be printed for free distribution. So similarly, I also have to mention that although it's not written in the acknowledgement because Sister Amy doesn't want it to be there. Actually, she also helped out in the other book, cultivation of metta and developing the understanding of the philosophy of metta. He actually helped me to locate this book via an online source. That's why she forwarded it to me through an email, and I use it as a base to improve on it. So we'd like to thank Sister Ingby also for helping out in that way. Then also to others, Sister Padmasri, Brad Tung, and some Kayamita who has helped in the printing of this book, formatting, creating the PDF format, and of course the proofreading of those things, the daughter, maybe, and many others. Then also the brother Sri An and Stephanie who has helped become our treasurer to collect the Kayamita funds. So they have also played their role, and they are also part of the book printing and the website community. Kayamitas who are helping us out in maintaining the website and updating the website and putting in all the important Dhamma materials. We would like to thank them all and rejoice. Then by the power of this wholesomeness, may all beings be well and happy, free from all mental and physical suffering, harm and danger, and may there be love, peace and joy deep within their hearts, so that the world can be more peaceful with greater harmony, always with metta. So I did that 31st August 2020. Well, that book was actually finalized by me on that day, 31st August 2020. But we only finalized the whole thing for printing recently to coincide with our 15th anniversary of our gathering of Kayamita, which is on this 31st of October 2020. It's a launch. Then I will show you what the book is. Maybe you look at the camera. This is the book, Metta Bhavana book. I hope you can see here. Metta Bhavana book. Means metta is loving kindness. Bhavana is meditation. So meditation on loving kindness. You can keep in mind and get hold of the original copy. Your friend needs, you can pass to them. In fact, I send the e-format to Eric Tam while he was in Sangay Hospital. I told him read it and use it. It will be very helpful for him to heal, to develop the metaphors within his entire body and mind. Then the cells will recuperate and the immune system will come back. So all these are very useful, very helpful. Then I will read on the first page. Maybe it will help many of you. Metta Bhavana. Metta or loving kindness is an incredibly beautiful and unique mind state which purifies the mind, dispelling all negativity of mind states like anger, malice, hate, envy, jealousy, unhappiness, resentment, sorrow, and lamentation. Then just as a mother wishes the welfare, the well-being and happiness of her only child, So the Sametta wishes the well-being, welfare, and happiness of all beings, irrespective of race, class, caste, creed. It is also one of the 10 perfection of paramitas that one must fulfill in the realm of existence until one gained perfect enlightenment. It is also one of the 3 good roots of karma. Yeah. So the Pali word is adosa, non-hate. Dosa is hatred or anger or envy, jealousy, negativity of mind state. Adosa is non-negativity. It's just love. As such, metta is an indispensable and essential virtue needed for the growth and purification of humanity, leading to the growth of a loving, caring, peaceful, progressive, and healthy society. That's why this loving kindness meditation, metta bhavana, is very useful. It can bring about growth and purification of humanity, leading to the growth of a loving, caring, peaceful, progressive, and healthy society. In the Buddha's teaching, metta is only one of the 4 metta, Brahma Vihara mind states. These are beautiful mind states of a Brahma. The other 3 are Karuna, which is compassion, Mudita, sympathetic joy or gladness at others' success and wholesomeness, or an altruistic, joyous mind state. And lastly, Upekkha is equanimity state of mind. According to Visuddhi Magga, metta is a purifying force which has goodwill, well-being, happiness, and friendliness as its characteristics. Its natural function is to promote goodwill, happiness, and well-being. It is manifested as the absence of ill will. Its essence is seeing and acting with kindness and love. When it is absent, it degenerates into selfishness, anger, hatred, affection, and desire. Those are its enemies within, which easily gain entry in its wake and must be guarded against. That's why without metta, all this negativity of mind state will enter your mind stream. Its enemy without is the major ill will, hatred, etc., which will find its opportunity in the intervals when loving kindness is not been actively cultivated with understanding. So this is a very good way of introducing metta. Then I will read to you the benefits of cultivating metta. Why do we cultivate metta bhavana, loving kindness meditation? In the discourse of the Buddha on the benefits of loving kindness, Metta Nisama Sutta, the Buddha listed 11 benefits that can be derived from cultivating metta bhavana. And I am pleased to add that many of these benefits has been confirmed by contemporary scientific research, also my own personal experience. These are very beautiful teachings. The 11 great benefits of loving kindness as listed by the Buddha are as follows. Number one, those who have insomnia, you will love this. You get to sleep well. You will have good sleep. When you go to bed having this feeling of metta or loving kindness towards yourself and others or beings, you will be relaxed and peaceful, and you will you will get to sleep well and easily. And when you wake up, you are always radiant. You have this metta in your mind. then your face will be full of metta, radiant, smiling, and radiating well-being. Then number two, the next benefit is, just now I mentioned is number two, you will wake up feeling good and having well-being, which is very true. When you have a good night's sleep, you will wake up feeling rested and rejuvenated. With a relaxed body and mind, you can connect with family members, friends, relatives, neighbors, colleagues, and even strangers in a genuine, happy, and well-mannered way. You feel fresh, uplifted, and joyful throughout the day. People who have met are very different. You are very friendly. You wish for the well-being and happiness of all. There is love towards all things, not only human beings or living beings, even the plants, the environment, and all the non-humans, all of nature, the insects, the animals, the fishes, and whatever they have life. That metta force is there. That's why the benefits of metta are very beautiful. Number three is good for those who often have nightmare when you sleep. You say you will not have nightmare while sleeping. The fourth benefit is your body relaxes and your heart is joyful and your face radiant. This one is a natural consequence of cultivating metta. Your body reflects your mind state. When you feel love for all beings, it shows up on your face. Seeing your honest, relaxed, and joyful face, others will gravitate towards you and feel good and safe being around you. Then number five, the fifth benefit. Even animals and celestial beings or non-human can feel you and can be drawn to you. This is very true. I tested it and it came out beautiful and positive. Then it's like you are being protected by the Dhamma protectors. Especially when you share merits and metta with them. When you cultivate metta, your mind generates a peaceful feel of loving vibration around you. Children especially are turned to this energy, and non-humans and animals can feel it too. Especially newborn baby or young babies. When you have metta, they can feel. Then sometimes they smile. they like have joy when they see you. They will not fear you. Then number six, spirits and devas protect you. And this is very true. There are times we feel guided and protected by beings beyond our sight. These are normally Dhamma protectors or non-humans that appreciate your Dhamma, that can feel your Dhamma, that rejoice in what you are doing. Recognizing this as a kind of grace is the source of serenity, whether it's literally true or there is some other causes and energy that give us this sense of guidance and protection. The Buddha included this as among the benefits of cultivating metta. I can confirm to you it's very true. Then number seven is also a very beautiful benefits. Fire, poison, and weapon will not harm you. When we read story of old, many of the elements are symbolic of mystical things. The Buddha shared tales of adepts who cultivated metta and were protected from fire, poison, and weapon. He explained that greed, hatred, and delusions are the fires, the poison, and the weapon against which metta protect us. So in this sense, metta is a very powerful purifying force. It really purifies your mind state so that all these evil roots, which are fires and poison or evil roots, they can actually be resolved, or you can just root it out to the power of metta, then they will not come in and disturb you. Then in the fire sermon, Aditta Pariyaya Sutta, the Buddha said that poison is of three kinds. We are in the sutta, the Buddha always used the word everything is burning. With what is it burning? It is burning with the fire of passion, which is greed, hatred, and delusion. So these are the three evil roots. Yeah? These are the three poison. Then the Buddha goes on and share. This weapon, they are like daggers, he said, can cut your peace into pieces. In the numerical discourses of the Buddha described bodily, verbal, and mental weapons. In the Udana, he said, they quarrel, squabble, and argue with each other, stabbing each other with the verbal dagger. This is Dhamma. That is known. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha said, there is no fire that burns like greed, hatred, and delusion. There is no misfortune like hatred, no suffering like delusion, and no greater happiness than peace. It is a well-known story about the power of metta. Uttara, a devoted devotee, a follower of the Buddha, was bereaved. She had been given in marriage to a man who did not have high regard for the Buddha. And so she had not seen the Buddha or his disciple for 2.5 months. She was feeling forlorn, and her father suggested she hire a courtesan to serve her husband while she joined the Buddha and his community for the final 2 weeks of the rains retreat or rainy season retreat or pangsa, we call it. Uttara agreed and was able to serve the Buddha and his disciple as a cook and attend to his teaching. One day, as he was looking out of the window of his mansion, Uttara's husband saw her working in the retreat kitchen wearing a stained apron and thought how pathetic it is. How can she be attending the retreat rather than indulging in the luxuries of time of life with him? Noticing his disdain for his wife, Sirima, the condition, began to plotting to harm Uttara, so she herself could become the man's wife. Sirima boiled some ghee and left the home to splash it on Uttara. When Uttara saw the condition coming to harm her, she meditated on loving kindness, metta bhavana, and remained completely at peace. At the same time, Uttara's maid servant also saw this foul deed unfolding and ran to stop Sirima. The maid tackled Sirima and began to pummel her, but Uttara intervened to save her attacker. After that, Uttara bathed Sirima in warm water and massaged her body with herbs and oil to soothe her wounds. Sirima fell to the ground and begged Uttara's forgiveness. Uttara said she would forgive Sirima if the Buddha advised so. The next day, Sirima asked the Buddha to forgive her for what she had tried to do. The Buddha asked Uttara how she felt as Sirima was pouring boiling ghee on her. And Uttara responded, I was grateful to Sirima for serving my husband, so that I could spend 2 weeks with the noble community. I have no ill will towards her, only loving kindness or loving friendliness. The Buddha commented on Uttara. He said, "Well done, Uttara. By not bearing ill will, you were able to conquer the one who abuses you. By being generous, you conquer the one who is so stingy. By speaking the truth, you conquer the one who lies." Upon the advice of the Buddha, Uttara forgave Sarima, and Sarima took refuge in the Buddha. In another story, the Buddha was told of Julasiva Thera, who was not at all affected by poison because of his profound cultivation of metta. The Dhammapada commentary tells of four Novik monks who cultivated loving kindness so profoundly, and they were unaffected by the poison. Not only were disciples of the Buddha protected by metta, but in one true story of a cow was spared from being shot with an arrow because of her love and affection nursing her calf. The Buddha taught that the six senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touch, and cognizing, are on fire. Any one of them is sufficient to consume us. The antidote, he taught, is to know reality. So this one is based on Metta Sutta. The eye is burning. Eye consciousness is burning. Then contact is burning. So all the six senses, the senses, they are all burning. With what is it burning? The ignorance of greed, hatred, and delusion. So all this, it can actually bring about evil. It can consume a person and bring forth the negativity of karma. So the antidote that the Buddha taught is to develop wisdom to realize or to understand reality. So all these are part and parcel of the teaching. So metta is very useful in this aspect. And when you have metta, you will not have all this negativity of mind state. So when your senses are on fire, the evil root cannot come out because you have metta. Be mindful and see how your sensation and various mind state affects you. Think of your own experience. See how much you are burned by the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. The fire of greed, hatred, and delusion. And how much you poison your mind with these three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. When you cultivate metta, your breathing becomes calm and you feel so much love and compassion that your mind state naturally wishes all beings to have well-being and happiness and to live in peace and harmony. So all these are the benefits of metta. Then the eighth benefit is your mind can easily calm down. Really true. When you have metta, your mind state are beautiful, that loving kindness in you. It calms down very fast and you are full of love. You are very kind, very generous, that well-being. You just radiate, radiate, and radiate. Metta stimulates a friendly feeling that makes us calm and happy. It truly is a wonderful way of life. Then number nine, the benefit is your complexion brightens. Metta show up in your face. As you develop metta, joy arises. At first, it was barely noticeable, but as the joy increased, it began to pervade the whole body and mind. Metta does not rely on any time, place, or condition. Once arose, it can remain present in you the rest of your life. your face cannot hide what is going on in your mind. When you are angry, it shows up on your face. When you are peaceful, everyone notices. The energy of metta spread throughout your bloodstream and nourishes your whole being. You look bright and clear, calm, peaceful, and radiant. So these are very beautiful benefits. Then number 10, the 10 benefits. You will die with a clear mind because of your metta. The thought of dying peacefully can be comforting. When we have unresolved conflict, death can be difficult. Loving kindness or friendliness can make dying easier for the one dying. There is a big difference between true peace and the appearance of peace. You may seem cheerful, you might even make people laugh, but when you are approaching death, if greed, hatred, and delusion are still lurking deep down in your psyche, that joviality will vanish. Cultivating metta or loving kindness sinks into the depth of your consciousness and make your mind genuinely calm. With metta, you will die peacefully without confusion. And in the Anguttara Nikaya Samavati, the wife of the king, the Buddha had declared chief among those who cultivate metta was burned alive while leading a loving kindness retreat for women. Magandhya was the culprit. So proud of her rare beauty, Magandhya rejected suitor after suitors. One day, her father saw the Buddha sitting underneath the tree and asked him to marry her daughter or his daughter. The Buddha explained his vow of celibacy and declined in a way that Magandhya found offensive, and she was determined to seek revenge. Magandhya knew that Samavati was one of the Buddha's favorite lay woman disciples. So she set fire to the house where Samavati was leading a metta retreat with 500 women. They all died in the fire. As she lay dying, Samavati declared, "Over many lifetimes, our bodies were burned repeatedly. As you pass from birth to death and back to birth, be heedful." The advice is, be heedful. Her words were so powerful that all the 500 women disciples that was with her, dying alongside with her, were inspired to cultivate metta bhavana in the final moment. Although their bodies were burned by fire, their minds were free, and it seems all of them become anagami. If I'm not wrong. Then the last benefit is, you will die in peace. If at the time of death you do not yet comprehend the highest truth or the Dhamma, you will still go to a realm of great peace. You have not completed the path of awakening before you die. The peaceful mental state generated by metta will still allow you to be born in the heavenly realm. Regardless of whether you consider heavenly a real or figurative place, this potent well and encourages us to cultivate loving kindness meditation while we can. These 11 benefits monks are to be expected from the release of heart by familiarizing oneself with thought of loving kindness, by cultivating metta bhavana, by constantly increasing these kind thoughts, by regarding loving kindness as a vehicle of expression and also as something to be treasured, by living in conformity with this thought, by putting this idea into cultivation and establishing them. So said the Blessed One, Metta bhavana should be developed for at least 5 to 30 minutes per session for the following reason. Eh? So improve your health, your mental health, and physical health by overcoming your anger, resentment, grudges, and hatred. By developing tranquility and stillness of mind. With metta bhavana, you can also develop jhanas, eh? Calmness of mind. Then it also helps improve patience, tolerance, and understanding, resulting in more harmonious human relationship at home, in school, places of work, and in society in general. It also helps overcome ill will, hatred, and other unwholesome thoughts directed towards you. The solution is simple. Reason why initially some people tend to doubt it. You create an atmosphere of tranquility simply by sending out loving kindness thought, especially to those who think they hate you. Hatred only feeds on hatred, and so the thought vibrations of hate, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, which meets a screen of love, can only dissolve or be turned back on themselves. Then this benefit also reminds me in the early day when I was doing a lot of this metta, especially when I just graduated. Every time before I go for an interview, I read the metta to all beings around there and to whomever who is going to interview me, and all say. And surprisingly, the first 4 or 5 jobs that I applied, I got an offer actually from all of them. Then I had to choose which one I want. Just upon graduation, I was like very excited. So I applied actually. But my first job was actually given to me before I even complete my exam or graduation. Because I had this 3rd year training. When I was training with that company, later on it became a listed company, it's a construction company. And in Jurutama, later on joined hands with the other two become IJN. So IJN and Jurutama. And because I did very well in the training, one of the director liked me, and it so happened the director was from my hometown too, and we get along very well. And he told both of us who were at the training, after graduation, if you need a job, you come and see me. That's why I went before the last final paper exam. Then he told me, no problem, you come and report for work immediately after your exam. We need people. So that time, I remember 1979 February. That day, my exam finished. I went there and see him, and he offered me a job. And I report for work the next Monday in Penang, where I stay in Alaska. So Penang, I think Bukit Tengah, I think somewhere on the province Wellesley side, Butterworth side. And that was my first job. Then after that, government service, they call up. So I had to report for government service. Then I remember when I went back to my hometown, I actually decided to apply a few other government departments for option to join the government. So I applied 5, and all the 5 that interviewed me offered me the job. So I finally chose one that is near my hometown. I think that one was MADA Agricultural Development Authority. So all this just happened because I had metta at that time. My metta very strong, it helped me. So if you want to attend interview or maybe sell something to somebody or what, you must have metta. It will help. Then be sincere, be honest. and do it sincerely, with love, with kindness, with understanding, it will help you. Then finally, for spiritual development, in the Sutta Nipata, the Buddha said, the cultivation or development of metta brings to perfection all the good mind states, beginning with dana or charity, resulting in the fulfillment of all the 10 perfection paramitas. It is an easy and pleasant method to develop samadhi, wisdom, and compassion, the ultimate goal of all spiritual development. So after this, I think I will skip. I will go to the second book. Then the second book, I will read to you only one part. The Karaniya Metta Sutta. This one is very good. The Hymn of Universal Love. This Karaniya Metta Sutta is a very powerful sutta. It actually explains clearly how the Buddha teach the non-humans to understand how to attain the state of peace, perfect peace, or enlightenment, Nibbana. So if you want to attain the perfect state of peace leading to realization of Nibbana, he said you must do the following. He who is skilled in working out his own well-being and wish to attain the state of perfect peace, Nibbana or enlightenment, should act thus. The first thing you must do is you must be upright, able and honest, gentle in speech, obedient and not proud. When I know about this sutta, I was very surprised. But later on, as I developed the cultivation, when I came across this sutta, I find it so strange. But each and every of those qualities that they mentioned, my nature has them. That's why it was so amazing and I like this sutta. Then the second requirement is you must be contented, easily supportable, which are my strong attribute. Not overly busy, which is what my nature is, with few responsibility and simple in living. This one matched perfectly. Then tranquil in his senses. This one also matched with sense restraint, prudent and courteous, not frowning on family. These are my virtue, my attribute. I am strong in all this field. Then the next one is also he must restrain from any slightest wrong action. I also very strong in this. That gives the wise reason to reprove him. Then let him cultivate the following kind thought. May all beings be well and happy, well and secure. May all beings be happy. So this one also I did a lot in the early years when I did metta. Then the next benefit, the next attribute is whatever living creature there be, without exception, weak or strong, long or huge, medium size or small, minute and bulky, whether visible or invisible, and those living far or near, born or those seeking birth, may all beings be well and happy. You will do that. Then let none deceive or decry others anyway. Then let none wish others harm in resentment or in hatred. Then just as a mother would protect her only child with her life, even so let one cultivate a boundless love towards all beings. This is a very good statement. Like a mother would protect her only child. Selflessly, you will do what you need to do to protect your child. Then cultivate an all-embracing mind of love, which I did, for all beings throughout the universe, above, below, and across, unhindered. Love that is without hatred or enmity. Then standing, walking, sitting, or reclining, as long as you are awake, let him develop the mindfulness or the awareness with all his might. This, they say, is the noble living here. This is daily mindfulness, which I also did it. Then next is not falling into wrong view and wrong belief, being virtuous, endowed with insight, craving and lust in the senses discarded. Verily, never again will he return to conceive in a womb. And this is beautiful. This one can be done if you have the understanding. Then they talk about the background of metta and all those things. Then finally, one last part is the three aspects of metta, the ethics of metta, and how to develop this metta bhavana cultivation. They also have the psychology of metta. Of all the three methods, the most effective one is method one. This one, maybe I read to you, it will benefit most people. This is on page 47. Sit down in a comfortable posture in a quiet place. It can be a shrine room, a quiet room, a park, or any other place providing privacy and silence. Keeping your eyes closed, repeat the word metta, metta, metta a few times, and mentally conjure up its significance. Metta, or loving kindness, as the opposite of hatred, resentment, malevolence, impatience, pride, and arrogance, and as a profound feeling of goodwill, sympathy, kindness, promoting the happiness and well-being of others. Then you start. Now visualize your own face in a happy and radiant mood. Every time you see your face in the mirror, see yourself in a happy, radiant mood with a radiant smile, and put yourself in this radiant mood during meditation. Then you start by radiating this metta. A person in a happy mood cannot be angry or harbor negativity or negative thought and feelings. So having visualized yourself in a happy frame of mind, now charge yourself with this thought. May I, this body and mind of mine, be free from all harm and danger, free from all hostility, free from all affliction, free from all sorrow, lamentation, and distress. Then may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy always. Feel it. As you suffix yourself in this way with a positive thought force of metta, you become like a vessel filled to its content, and its content ready to overflow in all directions. And then you start to read it. Next, you visualize your meditation teacher, if living, if not, just some other living meditation teacher or people whom you revered or love. Then see them in a happy frame of mind and project the thought of metta. May my teacher be free from all harm and danger, hostility, affliction, distress. And may they be well and happy always. May they live happily always. So all these are the effective way that you continue to all until even your enemy, people whom you don't like, to break through the barrier of wrong thought. So all these are very useful, very beautiful, and helped me so much in the early years of my cultivation. So metta bhavana is a must. This is a Dhamma tool that you must have to progress along the path of Dhamma, to help heal many things. So get over this book, read through it, understand it, and cultivate it. This is very beautiful, very useful. Okay, I will stop the introduction of this book, then we continue with our second session. Second session is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you have. Student, are you there?
Yes, Brother Teo. How are you? And everybody, all Kalyana Mitas.
Yeah, nice to hear your voice again, Susan.
Yes, yep.
So send our regards to your family and your brother, Benny.
Yeah, thank you. Right. Well, I was caught off guard, so I don't know what to
don't
say.
Worry, don't worry. Don't worry.
Yeah. So
you won't know what to say, huh? You just pray direct from your heart. Huh? You can also comment.
Brother Teo, like to thank you very much for the publication of this Metta Sutta.
Oh, yes.
Well, I believe that though everybody has heard of Metta Sutta and has been probably chanting the Metta Sutta and sharing of merits and everything, but it is important to have the full understanding, and the most effective way to share.
Oh, yes.
To share the metta.
Yeah.
Many a times we do it in a parrot fashion manner.
Parroting form. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And
not based on understanding.
The feel is not deep enough.
Not deep enough. Yes.
When we do it.
Yeah.
So I just like to thank Brother Teo for emphasizing on this, and especially in this book where it can be it can help many to do it the right way, to do it the most effective way.
Yes.
Sadhu.
Very beautiful book. Because in the early days, myself, I benefited a lot from it. Then when I bought this book, I shared with many Kayamita. Then they volunteered to actually help me like type out. At that time, I can't find the what they call, what you call?
Transcribers?
Transcriber or the soft copy. The soft copy. So we need to type it out. Somebody has to volunteer to type it out. So Sister Gole Hong was the one that helped me to type out one book. Then Eng Bi volunteered the other book. But Eng Bi later on told me, he said, still I didn't do much because I got it from the internet. The internet version. But actually not easy. To find that is not easy. But I do appreciate, but I respect her wish not to mention her name. Which is very good. Because according to her, she didn't do much. She just get the soft copy from the internet. And
That's Dharma in action, Brother Teo. Without expecting any...
any faith.
You know? That's right.
Very good. So because of that, this book came about. Then when I started to do it, then I recall how it benefited me, then how I share with people, and it benefited others. Then recently, I don't know what happened. So many Kayanamita call me out, and the message is always somebody sick or dying.
Right.
Problem. Then this metta book is very, very useful. So it came at the nick of time. Appropriate time, then all this become useful. Eric Tam is one of them. That's why I say this book will help you. So I send it to him. Then this session I share it because I understand not many people, like Susan mentioned, really understand how to cultivate this metta. And the benefits of metta are seldom been described. They are so beautiful. Then the Metta Sutta itself is so beautiful. These are the qualities that you need to have to realize the state of peace, enlightenment, Nibbana. So all this is meshed with Mangala Sutta for you to have good blessing. So all these teachings, they are very useful. They are very beautiful Dhamma. So when you understand, you want to know whether you have cultivated correctly or not, whether you have progressed correctly along the path of Dhamma. And you check against the Metta Sutta, check against the Karaniya Metta Sutta, and also the Mangala Sutta, and also the Avijja Sutta. You can know whether you have cultivated correctly or not. If all those virtue or beautiful quality of virtue or mind state that is mentioned in this Metta Sutta or Karaniya Metta Sutta and the Mangala Sutta are not in you, then you are far from realizing enlightenment. But you have most of them means you really have the Dhamma. So all these are very beautiful. Then the Avijja Sutta, you check. Do you have all the 10 steps that leads to the accumulation of enlightenment? So all these are very useful and very important understanding. That's why all the conditions fall into place. Then I decided to print this book. Then before this book are ready, I already share it in my some of the sharing earlier on, but not so detailed. I just give the copy of the photostat copy where I lost touch of the original copy. I give until no more, then I left it photostat copy. So I pity Go Lei Hong where she typed it out through the very, very blur type of photostat copy. But she did a good job. Then I edited it and helped improve on it. And Ng Bi Wan, he got me the soft copy, which was easier. So all these are the condition behind it. Sadhu, Susan, yeah. You have anything more to share?
Sadhu, Brother Teo. Yeah. Yes, Brother Teo. After this book, I hope you can move on to the rest of the four Brahma Viharas.
Okay.
If it's possible.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Beautiful. And sadhu to your good suggestion. Yeah.
Sadhu. Yeah. Sadhu, all Kalyanamitas. Yeah. Be safe and well.
Oh, sadhu. Yeah. Let us rejoice.
Sadhu.
Good. Yeah. So now you have the privilege to nominate somebody, Susan. Or do you have some more to share or report meditation? Or share your experience in how you apply Dhamma in daily life? It will be good.
Basically, Brother Teo, the emphasis now is more on having the daily mindfulness.
Yeah, that one is most important. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. That's right. And then thankfully to the MCO and now the EMCO, the opportunity for practice, you know, has increased definitely.
Definitely. Yeah, very.
Yeah, definitely. So being at home.
Yeah.
It's really a wonderful thing.
Yeah, sadhu.
Yes, and putting in as much practice as I can.
Sadhu. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So basically it is an ongoing thing.
Yeah, sadhu, rejoice. Right. Also you spend more time with your family members, because of
Yes. Yeah.
Many family feel that they now have the condition to spend more time with their loved ones. And they do a lot of things together now. They spend so much time together at home under lockdown.
Yes. It's true. It's true. I'm sure for all others too, everyone is enjoying the condition that we are in.
Yeah, sadhu.
You know, so we
felt blessed because of
yes.
the Zoom.
Yes.
The Zoom sharing. So now more people can have the sharing without coming to my house. But there are many kayamita who actually hinted to me that they will miss the real session. Because it's different. Because when face to face, it's different. Yeah, I do agree, yes. I do, but don't worry, yeah, let things be.
Yep. Yep. As long as we still put in our effort to and cultivate, to purify the mind.
Yes, and it will
I think that's more important.
Still more important.
Yeah.
Very good. Then I also told my wife, I said, my wife also mentioned later on when the vaccine is out, when the MCO is no more, then we revert back to normal again. But don't worry, we hope the situation will not spike again and will not be very bad. Then hopefully this coming 31st, our gathering of Kainamita.
Yes.
We can be
It's on, Brother Teo?
Yeah, on.
Okay. All right, that's good. It's
moment,
a good catch-up time too.
Yes, our crowd is not too big. So I think it's okay. Okay.
Right.
We have lunch is okay.
So
we already asked the catering site to actually make sure that everything is according to SOP. Then make sure everybody, every kayamita, wear mask.
Right.
And practice social distancing as much as you can. Then avoid conversation without mask.
Right.
Unless you are eating, then it's different.
Brother Teo, just something I would like to ask or your advice and thoughts on it is that having this MCO somehow from the teachers to the devotees, to the yogis, to the persons on the street or what have you, the minds of many people are changing for the better.
Correct.
And that actually shows that the consciousness of the people
are
developing.
Developing.
And that is a very supportive,
Very positive.
Very supportive way for us to overcome whatever difficulties and negativities that we are facing. So it is very important, and even all the teachers whom sometimes we hardly see or hardly hear from and all, they've all come out at this point in time. Until there's so many that sometimes you don't know who to go into, you know, but everyone has got their specialty. Everyone has got their ways of sharing. And all very beneficial.
This has benefited the totality of consciousness.
Yes.
Like you mentioned just now, do you have any specific question first?
Well, not quite for the moment. It has to be another time.
Okay. So what you asked just now is very important. Because this awareness that comes about because of the lockdown, the MCO, movement control order, has actually helped a lot of people to think differently. It's like a new normal is unfolding. So if you perceive it with negativity, then initially you will become like affected. Those who feel that their freedom is already being restricted, a lot of things they cannot do, and some they panic, they simply buy things, stop all the things. These are negative mind states. Don't do that. What is important is to understand whatever that unfold, let it unfold. Whatever that happened, like the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions behind. So learn to understand that. Learn to accept that reality. So why I say the consciousness is evolving for the better and unfolding for the better is because people has become conscious of the fact of too much of this greed, negativity of mind state, the industrialization, the various unethical way of doing business. So the manufacturing, that pollution that comes from the environment and all those things, and also all the negativity of mind state that created this pandemic. Everybody start to see that with the lockdown, even the first 3 months, the result is so significant. A lot of river gets cleaned up, you realize or not. A lot of pollution in the air, they improve air qualities. Then they realize human being now appreciate life better. They don't simply do things anymore. They are more concerned with environmental issues, protection, and have more understanding, love and care, social distancing. When you put on masks, you not only protect yourself, you protect others, like keeping precepts. When we keep our precepts, we protect ourselves from coming negativity. But at the same time, you prevent others from being harmed and hurt. So all this, there are a lot of similarity, and people start to appreciate why we must keep ourselves safe. When we keep ourselves safe, we will also help keep others safe. So face mask is like keeping precepts. When we protect ourselves, we protect others. Then there are many aspects of the understanding of nature's law that actually created all this movement. So those who appreciate and has the Dhamma and understand, they felt there is a blessing in this guy, like a lot of Kaimita share. If it's not because of this condition, they will not have the condition to cultivate so seriously. And many of those Kaimita that progress appreciated that. Oh, many. One of them is Po Cheng. We can see very clearly from her sharing or saying. And many Kaimita have that resolve to go forth and cultivate like yourself. You have determined. You have more time to yourself. Last time, most of us, we didn't really appreciate this type of lockdown because we think, oh, now I cannot travel anymore. I cannot have spiritual trip. I cannot have our classes. But if you think this way, then you are being negative. You're like the Buddha say, when condition is such, things will be such. So that is what Dhamma is all about. Learn. Let it unfold. Then when it unfolds, you will see the beauty of it. You will learn new things. You will understand new things. Then you realize the consciousness has evolved. People have started to accept the new normal. Then people have started to actually accept the change. The change is always for the better because it's about humanity as a whole, our environment, our health, our travel. So because of what happened, a lot of sector of the economy has been affected. Economic activity has been clamped down. Interstate travel has been clamped down. Then international travel has been clamped down. And a lot of related industry, especially the airline, the hotel, and the tourism industry, they have been affected. So we see all this happening. So when conditions change, overnight, things can change. So even from the stock market, you can see. Because of the pandemic, certain used to be very powerful, strong blue chip like AirAsia, Genting, and other resort, or even betting, Toto and Magna, their results are affected. They can just go down like that. Then for those who benefited are those who know how to move to the appropriate direction, like those involving medical facilities, health, glove and all those things, then face mask, and all those PPE related industry. These are the industry that benefited, but these are the industry that are very useful. That's why the world start to recognize. Then consumption, when it slow down, it create more innovation. People become more innovative. I was told online sales increase. People go to the digital platform. People no longer depend on traditional way of getting things. So delivery has picked up. You realize a lot of Food Panda, Grabs, and even Lalamove, many other have picked up. Then all the various type of digital platform and apps, the way we go about doing things is different. Even the banking, they have improved. Know your client, KYC. Now no need to have face-to-face type of KYC. They can use, like Maybank announced, virtual. You don't need to have face-to-face. So all this is how innovation benefits society. How we actually force to go into innovation to improve the way we do things and modify the way we do things. And ideas help out so much. Artificial intelligence has helped out so much. It has improved actually a lot of things. Then because of IT, it's self-regulate. IT can help self-regulate many things, even online purchase, all those things. The merchant who wants to cheat and shortchange people, they are being weeded out. You have to be honest, sincere, otherwise they take you out. Then for all these sales to improve, you must follow their standard agreement or condition to participate in the supply change. And the way the whole global economy has evolved is actually for the better. And people are more conscious of environment. The awareness is there. So many things has changed. That's why I say we need crisis, pandemic to evolve new things and to actually bring about transformation. So thank you so much, Susan, for initiating such good questions.
Thank you.